Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of incredible radio in the back of Roberta's restaurant, Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today I'm joined by a lady of many things, a writer, an artist, a pastry chef, Victoria Yeehow. Victoria, thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
All right.
Yes.
So we have so much to talk about.
I hope so.
Otherwise, we can just, you know.
We have jelly beans.
And we have lots of jelly beans and coffee, so it's going to be great. So let's start from the beginning. Give us a bit of your context on, you've done so many things in such like what seems a short amount of time, and you're so talented. Let's start with
praise.
Well, let's start with art, and then move into pastry.
Let's see. Currently, I am working at a company called Cream Art, working with contemporary artists making conceptual dessert. I also write and make photo books and fanzines. Done it for years, but more so in the past year and a half. I occasionally curate pop-up shops. I used to run a bakery out of my house. I'm working on a couple of photo books right now. Sorry, this is like a long run-on sentence. That's usually how it ends up when people ask me what I do.
We are very similar. All right. Let's see. So you became a pastry chef. Let's start.
Yes, I worked as a pastry chef.
Yeah. So tell me how that started, and then where it led into having kind of a pop-up shop in your house.
Yes, I was living in Seattle for a while, and I moved cross country. I moved to Philadelphia, and as I wanted to try something new, I had two jobs in Seattle mostly. I was working managing a small press library at an arts organization, and then I was also working as an accessories designer. So I was working as a seamstress and designing small goods. Which I loved. It was great, but I wanted a change, and I was moving cross country, and I liked the idea of doing something completely different, and I don't know, having this duality of, like, I guess I wanted a reinvention. I wanted new friends, a new apartment, new city, new job, nothing related to anything I used to do, or at least getting a little bit further away from what I used to do. So I got to Philadelphia, and I started working a little bit with food, and I enjoyed certain parts of it, but it was very casual. And then when I moved to New York, I guess I was working another job that paid me very well, that wasn't very respectable, and I needed a cover job. So I started asking around, and I had a friend that worked as a server at some restaurant, and she got me an interview with a pastry chef, and I trailed for a month. And all of a sudden, she stepped down, and the other woman that I was working with stepped down, and then all of a sudden, I was handed this position of, like, oh, I guess I'm the pastry chef. I have no experience. It's kind of a fluke. I ended up they shouldn't have hired me, really. I was the pastry chef of this restaurant, just kind of thrown into it. And I guess I liked that, just the idea of, I had no experience doing it, really. I was working around all these, like, really rough Honduran Mexican guys. I was the only woman in the kitchen. I wore, like, ridiculous outfits all the time. I did everything wrong. Worked in a basement kitchen. I was living on this boat and commuting into the city to work at like this 6 a.m. pastry job, and then doing this other job on the side, and just like having this whole combination of things. I just thought it was kind of bizarre and interesting and surreal, so I kept doing it, and I guess eventually I got bored, or I just started to run out of things I wanted to do at the restaurant. Even though I'm really good friends with like I made so many good friends at that restaurant and had a really great time. I got fed up with other things working in the restaurant industry. It's really difficult to work in a kitchen. The pay is also very, very low. It's pretty much standard low, no insurance. I think at one point I had an oven blow up in my face, and
oh my god,
it's just kind of sad sometimes to work in a New York City summer in a basement, and you're sweating. And yeah, so I decided that I was going to try something new, and I liked the idea of opening a secret shop. So I opened up a secret shop in my apartment, and it just happened to sell desserts because that's what I was doing. But it could have been a bookstore or anything. I just liked the idea of having something hidden.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, can you describe sort of the process of that? Like, how did it come about? How did you run it? And what were some of the things that you were offering to people?
Well, it started off very quickly. When I opened the thing out of my house, which was called the Chinatown Cake Club.
Which is one of the coolest things that has happened in New York in the past like 5 years. You're being very modest. But
you're only saying that because you never win.
Well, that's not true. But
did you?
Well, no, I never went, but I still.
Okay. So many people came.
I'm like that next, like the second generation kid that's like, oh man, the Grateful Dead was so cool, man. I was there too, but I didn't go. So.
Well, I like the idea of the legend of. Like yeah, having something be cooler than it sounds cooler than it actually was. I mean, I'm sure if you talked to everyone that actually came to my house and hung out with me for 6 hours, they'd complain and say it was hot and like the food sucked.
I
drank too much.
That sounds like paradise.
I mean, towards the end, it was pretty great, but yeah, I know it started off like I had no intention of making it this big, huge thing. I just invited, I emailed 10 people of friends and said, oh, I want to invite you over for dessert and coffee and let's watch a movie. And I called it this thing, and I made a cheesy little website because I was a dork. And all of a sudden, a friend of one of the people I emailed wrote about it on a blog, and then it just kind of blew up, and I went with it because it just seemed so weird. All of a sudden, 100, 200, 300 people were emailing me like, oh, can I come over? It's like, well, my apartment's really small. And yeah, it wasn't my intention, but then it just seemed so bizarre and odd to have that many people have this desire to come to my house. And this is funny to me because I'm not a people person. If anything, I'm pretty antisocial, and I'm pretty happily antisocial. not much of a party person, don't invite people over often. So I don't know, it just sounded totally unlike me and bizarre and strange. I just did it.
So what were you, can you describe some of the desserts that you were making? Because you had some really interesting stuff on the menus, because yeah. Then you created a cookbook.
I did.
That I can't find on the internet anymore. I think it's out of print. But
I'll slip you one later.
Awesome. So yeah, what were you making? And then also describe the vibe when strangers come into your house, because the experience of that, what was that like for you?
Well, the vibe was pretty weird. At first it was more friends, and that was great. And then slowly people would start reviewing it on Yelp, and people started checking in on it. Like I'd noticed they'd do that on their phones.
Like
it was really, yeah, it was creepy.
Ooh, that's weird.
And I mean, it was just my house, and my house is really small. It's like I would tell people that, and they'd come over and then be like, oh, you were not kidding. It's really uncomfortable. It's like, that's the point. I don't know. I had one friend tell me at one point that it was like a weird pickup scene. Like my house was turning into a weird pickup scene. There was like lots of Asian women and like single Asian women. I don't know. It was funny. But I mean, I ended up making a few friends out of it, and that was great. But for the most part, I think it just kind of bewildered people. Like, they came up to my house expecting this kind of cutesy thing, and actually it was just this kind of stuffy little apartment where people were eating and enjoying themselves and talking with each other, but a lot of people were just awkward and sitting by themselves. And
oh, that's always sad when, like, especially with dessert, because it's like such a...
Yeah, it can be like a very... I mean, you think of eating as a very communal, social thing.
Yeah.
But people would come alone and...
And not talk to anyone?
And not talk to anyone, or not talk to me, or... like, I'd tell people, like, look, I know my apartment's small. Like, you're welcome to go into my room. Like, I laid out books and stuff. You can... Like, there's music. Like, I really don't care if you go through all of my stuff. I don't care. And people would get weird. Like, they wouldn't touch things. I don't know. It was great people watching.
Yeah.
It was an interesting...
Well, it's kind of...
little concept.
It's like, you know, supper clubs. Same kind of thing. I mean... I have friends that have supper clubs, and mm-hmm. it is kind of a weird but fun concept in theory.
Yeah, I've never actually been to one, but that was another weird thing too. Like, I started it, and all of a sudden, it got a lot of press, and then it got a lot of, I guess because of the press it got, I would get emails a lot. Like, at one point, I was getting it like every day or every other day, like pitches for TV shows on food or... like articles, but mostly TV shows. It was like every week there'd be a new TV show about food that they'd want, like, oh, you should be the host, or can you come to this audition? And this whole culture of glamorizing eating, or the, I don't know, it's like this very, this trend of I mean, it's just eating, and I don't know, it's like more and more TV shows are out about food, and it's just kind of, I'm bewildered. I don't really understand it.
It's like a sports culture now, I think.
Yes.
Watching people eat. So, okay, we have a lot more to talk about, but I want to shift gears. I want to talk about train hopping. You know, a lot.
Totally, it's like a big gear shift.
Yeah, let's do it. You know a lot about train hopping. Why?
That's debatable. My friends wouldn't think so.
Well, first of all, why do you know about it? And we'll go from there.
I guess you're talking about this because I gave you my zine. I made a zine about train hopping, and I just handed it to you. I guess, let's see, when I was 18 or 19, I decided, well, I mean, I always liked trains. I always had friends that did it, and I decided I wanted to do it. So when I was 19, I went on a trip with some friends through Canada, and it ended up being this epic thing, like, we almost got deported, and we got denied entry twice into Canada, and I can go back now, but it's difficult, and I don't know, in a lot of ways the trip was a total disaster, and it was awful and cold and uncomfortable, and there's lots of hitchhiking and sleeping, and it was just like the disaster trip, like the worst possible trip in many ways, but also enjoyable in others. I kept doing it and ended up going on more trips by myself. And I mean, whatever, I've always traveled in all sorts of ways. I've traveled, I kind of grew up in a family that has traveled since I was a baby. I've traveled overseas. So it's quite normal for me to think, oh, well, this weekend I'll go blah, 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 or this year I'm going to so-and-so. So it's just another way to travel, really, for me. It's been that way since I was 18. But I've always taken photos. I've always taken microphones and recorded with those, the sounds, and, I don't know, like, interviewed people. Or at one point, I made a movie with someone.
Wait, I'm fascinated because, you know, train hopping, are you actually just hopping on the train? There seems like there's got to be an etiquette to that, because one, I am accident prone. I would find a way to cut off my legs. And two, once you're on the train, what are you doing inside? Because I imagine you're not in like the coach area.
No, when I say train hopping, I mean like freight train hopping. No, you're not in the coach area, although the last trip I did, I feel guilty. My friends are going to give me a lot of shit for this.
Oh, this is like a huge culture.
It's. I mean, I guess it's part of my fascination with it is because it's a hidden culture. It's not something that a lot of people know about, although more and more it's becoming this trend. Like, you see more and more books, you see more and more movies. Like, I've even seen, like, ads for jeans that it's like, oh, this kid's wearing these jeans, but he's hopping a train. Like, it's more and more commercial. It's like this romanticized idea, and it's also very much a part of American culture. It's like a romantic notion of, oh, let's hop a train. But it's something that not that many people do, relatively. It's not fun in a lot of ways. It's cold and uncomfortable, and it takes a really long time.
Who are some of the people? I'm so curious because, you know, New Orleans has a very big train hopper community. There's so many young people that come through, like, hopping trains.
Yes.
And where are people, like, what kinds of people are you meeting? And where are some of the unique American towns that you came upon in your travels that you maybe learned something about that town that you hadn't expected?
Let's see, towns I've spent a lot of time in. Eugene, Oregon. Small town, but lots of trains go through there. I don't know, I've started a lot of trips there. It's close to Seattle, where I'm originally from. Northern California. I'd say generally the West Coast is much easier. You get more of a train culture. It's warmer. It's like more of that road culture also. Vancouver. Chicago's a big train town, but I haven't really done that much on the East Coast. And I mean, even now, like, yes, I like to do it occasionally, and I've gone on trips solely just to, like, I've taken planes to towns just so I could hop a train out of that town, which is kind of sick in some ways, but I don't do it as much as, like, I have friends that do it full time. I have friends that do it because they have to. I don't. For me, it's a luxury. For me, I do it because it's fun and because I enjoy it, but it's just another way to get from point A to point B. Although I do like the aspect of that hidden, it's like a very inconspicuous way of traveling. You see a lot, but very few people see you.
We are going to take a quick break. We're not going to hop a train, but keep it locked. You're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'll be right back.
Line the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, past the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand.
This program has been sponsored by the Hearst Ranch. At Hearst Ranch, ranch manager Cliff Garrison describes their philosophy. Raising cattle on grass is both an ancient practice and one that is standard in much of the modern world. Sometimes the old ways are the right ways. We believe that our methodology is the right one for us. For more information on their premium grass-fed beef, visit HearstRanch.com.
But there won't be a single thing that you can do. He's a god, he's a man, he's a ghost, he's a guru. They're whispering his name through this disappearing.
You're listening to Red Right Hand by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds on You Look Hungry.
Whoa, all right, thank you very much, executive producer Jack Inslee. That is a new feature of this incredible radio station. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm still your host, Helen Holliman. I'm joined today by Victoria Yi Hao. We've got a lot to talk about, but before we get back into it, I've got an official announcement. Gotta come join the HRN team this Wednesday evening, March 21st, at Santos Party House. Enjoy all you can eat and drink of artisanal food and drink. We've got craft beers, spirits, maple roasted pork, Jasper Hill cheeses, and much, much more. Click on the HRN website for details on time, tickets, and location. And I'll be there, so you should probably come anyway. All right. So before the break, we were talking about desserts, train hopping, traveling, connections, like having strangers in your house, which terrifies me. But I want to shift gears. I want to talk about one of the projects you're involved with here in New York called Cremart. Am I pronouncing that properly? Cremart? Cremart?
Yeah. Cremart. No, Cremart.
Cremart. You got it. Okay, so it's like cream, but not. Art. Okay.
Yeah.
So for listeners out there who don't know, can you describe what Cremart is and what are you guys doing? Because it's pretty wild.
It is pretty wild. What do we do? A lot. We work with artists and create desserts with them, conceptual desserts, not necessarily edible or appetizing or, it's not like we're a caterer. We create additions with artists. We're kind of like a logistical planning. People have been asking me a lot lately what a Cremart is about. We work with artists to kind of realize their concept in a dessert form. So it's like a blend of food and art, but mostly art. And we prefer to work with artists that have never done anything related to food, to kind of take them out of their usual practice, their usual medium. We've worked with a lot of artists, Terrence Coe, and most recently, well, we worked with Marina Abramović in L.A. at the MoCA Annual Gala. Big artists, big projects, big events. We work for museums, Art Basel Miami. We did a big thing there. We're doing something at the Whitney, actually, this June, which that was my day all day. Today, working on that. We're doing something with Caleb Lindsay, who's a great local Brooklyn-based video artist. Doing something related to pastry. It's secret, but it's going to be interesting.
Well, so, yeah. So, like, from what I understand, you take any artist and they work with a pastry chef or a pastry team, sort of, in the New York area. Is that right?
Yeah, or wherever we do events. Like, we've done events all over the world at this point. Hopefully Asia and Europe soon. We have this little, like, roster of pastry chefs that we can work with, and we can pretty much do anything. I don't know, like earlier in the office today, we had a guest, Antonio Miralda, who's a fabulous Spanish artist. We worked with him in Miami creating edible news. He printed a newspaper on edible paper, and then people printed their own articles and then ate it. The idea that you're consuming news, I don't know, you could go on the website and learn more about the project, but yeah, we work with a lot of different chefs, a lot of different artists, doing a lot of different things.
I really liked the toilet paper dessert wall bathroom situation. Yeah. It's really, really amazing. You can watch you should watch the videos so you can kind of get a better sense of the experience. But what struck me as interesting about this is, you know, there's food as experience in the art form and how people interact with these creations. Like, how or what have you noticed about people in these spaces? Because I mean, it is amazing to watch people eating this stuff and like sort of I wouldn't
it
destroy
makes some of them uncomfortable,
yeah, because
I think it's part of the appeal.
But at the same time, in some of the videos it seems very gluttonous, or I hate to say sexual, but there's some very
it's all related
primal
to food.
And
no, I mean, food, and I mean, I guess it's part of my interest with food, the gluttony of it, the sexual overtones of a lot of, I mean, dessert especially. I mean, it's indulgent. Cremart was started by my boss, my friend, Rafael Castoriano, and he worked for many years as an art consultant. He was bored out of his mind because it's boring. Sorry, Rafael. And he started Cremart to kind of, play with the idea of art and dessert, the idea that both are kind of this indulgent, ephemeral, non-essential things in a lot of ways. You don't need, I mean, it's like a luxury. Dessert is a luxury. Art in a lot of ways is luxury. So combining those ideas, I don't know, we play around with those.
I want to come because it looks really
fun. Oh, you're totally invited.
So getting kind of back to you as an artist, you completed a residency recently, is that right? At Arabica.
Yes. Well, it was a residency of sorts. Like I was just recently in Seattle visiting for a few months. I've been traveling for the past 8 months, and I'm just now back in New York for this month. And while I was in Seattle, I was out getting a drink with a friend, and we walked into this cafe where I knew, a friend of a friend of mine knows the owner, but I don't really know him. And we kind of both looked at each other, and we started talking, and he is an artist, the owner, Jojo, my friend, best friend. Love you.
Hey, Jojo.
Come visit. We started talking because he is not a chef and had no intentions of opening a restaurant. He was a art director for many years and ended up just opening this cafe in Seattle, and it's gorgeous. We started talking about art, we started talking about food, and then we both kind of came up with the idea of doing a residency in his space that wasn't necessarily an artist residency, but it wasn't necessarily a chef residency, sort of combining the two concepts and working together, playing with the idea of your senses, the idea of making food that's not necessarily appetizing or edible or appealing, certain smells, textures. So we went on a hike. We had a meeting. I proposed a meeting, and he asked if we could go on a hike and then have a meeting at the end of the hike. So we did that, and we hit it off, and ended up doing an 8-week residency of sorts where I was coming in for a few times a week and making really weird things. Yeah, like edible perfumes. And
you made some bruise cakes. Can you explain what that is? Because it's really
funny because I was reading a review. A couple of people reviewed them, and they started going off on what does it mean? Like, it's so sexual. And then there's like this the bruises symbolize like the female role in the kitchen, blah, blah, blah. And I just made them because they're pretty and like, I thought they matched like the pink and the blue, and so I made a series of 6 cakes, small cakes, and each one was topped with a photo that was edible of a different bruise that has been on my skin. Like, I've always taken photos. I guess I'm obsessed with the idea of documentation in lots of different aspects of my life. So I always take photos of any cut or bruise I have, and I've just done it for years. So I had all these photos of bruises. There's like a file of cuts and bruises on my laptop, and I like the idea of, not memorializing, but just sort of having this little set of cakes that was each one a bruise.
What were they filled with?
Pink cake, fleshy.
Any kind of like strawberry. Jam or?
Yeah, blueberry. It was kind of like this purple, blue, pink, bruisey. Bruisey themed, yeah. Yeah, they were actually pretty good.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. I would like one. And you also made pie pops. What is a pie pop?
Oh, that was me pandering to the masses. I made tiny little pies. I think it was a case of me not feeling like doing anything that... being more commercial, having Jojo maybe complain that we weren't selling anything.
You have to have like the cake pop equivalent.
Kind of. Like the cupcake equivalent, which I hate cupcakes. I don't even eat. I don't like cake, actually. I don't even like dessert that much.
You hated it.
It kind of scarred me. I made some pies and I stuck them on sticks and I sold them and they sold pretty good. So.
Yeah, well. Yeah. They look awesome.
And, yeah, they were cute. They were cute. I mean, I like that. I like the idea of the aesthetic of pastry much more than the actual taste or the satisfaction of eating it. I mean, honestly, when you eat a dessert, it makes you feel good, but if you eat too much, you get sick, and sugar usually makes me get kind of sick, and just the aesthetic, the look of it, I like more.
So I've had, people from the magazine White and Zinfandel on here, which is
I love them.
It's a great art publication. The artist Jennifer Rubel has been on another HRN radio show here. the food scene, and she does a lot of kind of food experience-based art. And you're here, and that's, I know you do many things, and food isn't your main thing that you do, but looking at food as sort of a burgeoning art form, like, what do you think about that? Why do you think people are integrating it more into the artistic thread these days? Or is it, do you think it's just a trend, or do you think that it's a new expression for art, or...
I don't think it's new. I mean, people have been doing things with food for a long time. Like, I don't know. Like, I was just reading the Futurists cookbook a few months ago, but and that's pretty old. And they were doing some pretty wacky stuff that, with food
from the 70s, 60s, 70s.
No, I didn't finish it. And I read too fast. Yeah, for a long, I mean, since before then. So I don't think it's new, although I definitely do think it is a trend. The foodie scene, I guess, is more and more apparent, especially in New York City, especially in Oakland, where I just spent a little bit of time, San Francisco. But no, I don't think it's new. Why? I mean, food is a very base thing. It's an essential thing for everyone. So to play on the symbolism with food, to play with food culture. I mean, you can make art out of anything. It doesn't seem unnatural to me to bridge those two, food and art.
And then you can just eat it if it's terrible. You know what I mean? So it's like a win-win.
Or throw it up, and then it's performance art.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it, too. Well, so you've got a website, which is...
Oh, it's...
Well, you don't have so to tell if you don't want
you can,
to.
You can say it.
Is it
Yeehaw? It's, yeah, you okay. did it right. It's okay. It's my name. It's just yeehaw.com.
.com. It's awesome. And then Kreemart is kreemart.com. T.com,
yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, although you should look on our Facebook page also, because we've been posting more photos on there, and awesome. We'll probably post something about some events soon.
Do it. You'll be really happy you did. And Victoria, thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're so welcome.
I'm going to go hop a train now.
Thanks. Eat pizza.
And eat pizza. Thanks to Jack Inslee and the rest of the crew at Heritage Radio Network and Roberta's. I'll see y'all next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.